Hey, this is Brandon Curry, IFBB Pro, and you're listening to Advices Radio Network.
Blood, Sweat, and Gear is for informational and educational purposes only. Kids, don't try any of this at home.
Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, is S2H, Skip Hill. This program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You could use our code ADVICES for some additional savings. You can also use our code ADVICESOATS for 25% off any of their oatmeal blends. We've been holding a contest. I've been sending out 1 pound bags that I purchased myself of the oatmeal blends so that people can try them out. The contest is over now, but thank you to everybody who participated. We're going to do another one in the future. Guys, I literally just got back, from the Olympia. The Olympia was last night. It ended, I got home, was asleep by like 1:30 a.m. Pacific time, woke up at 3:30 a.m. so that I could make my flight, got home, and it's now a couple hours later. I took a 1 hour nap, maybe a little bit more than that, and now we're live. I'm literally off the plane, seriously. So we have a new champion, Brandon Curry. And there was a lot of interesting stuff. It was a fun weekend. So I want to start out by saying that, and it was all a blur because I'd been there since like Wednesday. Anyway, we'll get into that stuff. Skip, S2H, guys, what is happening? Skip, you're in your best mood ever, aren't you?
I'm in a great mood. Why would you think otherwise? That's horrible. I gave it away. I didn't know we were live. I'm not in a bad mood.
No.
How's my connection? Does it sound pretty good?
You're good. You're good.
For now.
Yeah, good. Yeah, you don't want to tell me. That's what it is. I totally get it.
Yeah, we're good.
So basically you have jet lag. I mean, if you're not, because number one, and I don't know if the listeners know this, but you don't stay up very late.
No.
You're kind of one of those, you know, if you hit me late at night, I'm asking you, what the fuck are you doing up?
Right.
Because usually you're hitting me like before I go to bed and you've just gotten up, that
exactly.
sort of thing.
That's what you're so, the only person, like when I get up pretty early, you're like the person I know I can reach. It's like 5:30, 6 in the morning. And I'm like, I know I can text Skip.
Yeah. Skips up. Yeah. So you said you got in bed at 1:30 Pacific time, so that's like 2:30, 3:30. That's 4:30.
I know
your time.
Victoria, Eastern time. Victoria sleeps earlier than me. Like she's good for like 9:30. She wants to go to bed on a regular day. So we were like that. We were party animals this weekend. That's for sure.
This is how late it was. This is just to give the listeners an idea how late it was. Okay, Victoria, Scott, do you want to have sex? Scott, I'm pretty tired.
That already happened hours ago.
That's how late it was.
That already happened. Yeah. I do have a funny story. I won't tell you that one.
No, you can't. No.
I pulled this move. It felt like a baller move where, and I told her, I was like, I may tell this story just cause I felt, you know, so we went to the Golden Nugget. I don't know if you're familiar with that hotel, but it's down in old Las Vegas. So that's the area where, like, you know, that's like Fremont District, Fremont Street, the Fremont Experience. And that's like where all the gangsters were, you know, back in the day, like where the mob built. I mean, the mob probably still did build Vegas, but I'm going to skip the initial details. But then I, you know, hopped up, felt like a champ. They have bathrobes there, okay? Like, they have Golden Nugget robes. I threw my robe on, just no shoes, no nothing else, grabbed the ice bucket, walked down the... They have the old school ice machine that you actually, like, put it in the wall and press the button. And it's, okay. from 1955. And the thing still runs. It makes the best ice in the world. I'm just, like, walking down the hallway with my bathrobe on, feeling like a champ. It was an experience. Anyway, though, it was fun. There were so many details. Because we had press passes, too, which was exciting. I can tell you that Victoria... got Chris Cormier kicked out of a seat so that she could have it. That was interesting. That was a highlight for me.
What was he doing? Trying to take her seat?
Well, the press was press was allowed to sit. Like the first three rows were reserved. Then press was allowed in the next few rows behind that. And she came up and we were trying to, you know, people would sneak in and sit in those seats. And this guy who was running the seats, he was basically like a bouncer. Like, I did not want to piss him off. You know, he looked, and the longer he was there, the more pissed he was getting. And he grabbed his credentials and go, "Let me see your credentials. You know, right here. Where's yours? If you don't have them, get out," yelling at people, you know. And you know, Victoria's standing there and she's like trying to like get out, stay out of the way of people and stuff. And he was like, "Where's your seat?" And she's like, "I don't have one." And he's looking around. He looks at Chris Cormier and he's like, "You." He's like, "Where's your credentials?" People are like, "That's Chris Cormier. That's Chris's seat." And they're like, "No, it's not. He's not press. He's got to move."
And so nice.
Yeah, you know, she got his seat. So,
God, what a bitch. She took Chris Cormier's seat. Seriously.
That's what everybody was saying.
Oh, my God. That's horrible. No, in all honesty, listen, I don't care who you are. If you're not supposed to be sitting there, your ass don't need to be sitting there. So I don't want her to think I think she's a bitch because she's not a bitch.
It happened to Roden at the Arnold. VJ and I were sitting there in press. And Sean came up. And he had a buddy or something. He sat down, you know, in front of us, just kind of snuck in. And the guy who was, I forget his name now offhand, a nice guy, he was like, "Excuse me." He's like, "Are you press?" He's like, no. But he's Sean Roden, you know. You're like, Sean Roden, yeah. Go anywhere. And they're like, "No, you got to move." Like, they kicked him right out of there. There was like 20 seats, but they didn't.
Well, it's kind of hard to be Sean Roden. And I mean, because obviously they knew who he was.
Right.
So he had to be kind of, he's like, "Oh," like they asked him if he was press. He's like, "I just fucking won the Olympia. Clearly they know that I am not part of the press. So I'm screwed here." Now, why don't you have seats then? For people like the Chris Cormiers and the people who show up, who are kind of bodybuilding, you know, celebrities, and they shouldn't have regular seats. I mean, on the one hand, you'd think, come on, Chris. But then on the other hand, I can see if I'm Chris Cormier, I'll be thinking, okay, maybe I should have a decent seat, but yet still not steal it from, you know, someone who should actually be sitting in the seat and has to explain to the bouncer guy that big Chris Cormier guy sitting in my fucking seat over there.
it was kind of chaos in that respect. That was at the expo stage, you know, while they're getting ready to do, I think they're getting ready to do Classic at the time there. But it was a great weekend. I know you weren't super invested in this Olympia. I was, you know, I had been following I took a shine to Brandon this past year. Yeah, he had made so many cool improvements, and I was just really excited about that. And then to see him, you know, win the Arnold, like, that just was so cool. Because VJ and I were talking about it on BNR, and then it was just so exciting to see him do that, and then to continue, you know, that snowball basically into where he ended up. So it was fun, man. It was a good time.
Didn't you interview him?
I did, yeah. We've done a few shows now, but yeah, I just interviewed him about 10 days out before, you know, he flew out to Vegas. He was going to stay in Vegas for a week, and it was just a few days before that. So yeah, I got a chance to talk to him, and he's a cool dude, man. He's really, I mean, he's willing to talk to guys like us. You know what I mean? He's not like too great or too cool. You know, he's definitely somebody who loves the sport of bodybuilding. And he has a lot of respect for his fans. So, you know, it was cool. It was exciting, man.
Dude, you're too humble. You're so big time getting all the people on. I think I sent you a text. That's why I brought that up. How would I call you? Ed Bradley or something from 60 Minutes?
Ed Bradley. I don't even know who that is.
60
That's
Minutes.
Horrible. He doesn't even. Yeah. Scott does not know who Ed Bradley is. I think we can all take a moment of silence here to feel really fucking old for a second.
Oh, man.
If he was one of those young prep coaches, he would have the answer.
Exactly. He doesn't even know what 60 minutes is. He's like, 60 minutes? What does that have to do with anything? What's an hour? I don't give a fuck.
I texted him something about being big time or something, some news show.
That's funny. So, Skip, you made a post, speaking of which, you're like, what did you say, man? It was something about the prep coaches. This is like their opportunity to, what was it?
I'm not feeling well for like the last week. I'm in a bad mood anyway. But yeah, that post was basically about how I can't stand social media half the time anyway. But, you know, the day after the Super Bowl or the day after anything major, especially the Olympia, it's like nails on a chalkboard because everybody who's nobody has an opinion on not only who should have won and but why. And they've got it all figured out, and it's just it's this giant fucking eye roll that just I can't even. And it, and unfortunately, because it's the day after, it's post after post. It's every fucking post is someone's opinion who doesn't know shit, and you know he should have never won, and he this is why he this and that, and it just makes me want to vomit into my mouth and then swallow it down again and then vomit it again. And it's just a repetitive cycle. And you know what? It's funny because you said, I'm not very invested in this Olympia. I would agree with that. I'm not invested in any of them. And I think it's funny how, or for a very long time, I guess. And it's funny to me because people say like, oh, this was like the worst Olympia all ever. They're all bad. They're all anticlimactic in the sense that, okay, maybe when Phil lost, that was exciting.
Yeah.
Because at least it was something that never fucking happens that people kind of didn't see coming. I mean, you kind of did because, you know, the people that hate Phil, they were like, oh, yeah, you know, back even when Kai, oh, Kai's going to kick his ass when Kai doesn't. Oh, Kai's the best bodybuilder ever. He's Mr. Olympia. Kind of like, not my president. He's just my, Kai is Mr. Olympia. He's not. He lost. Kai's Mr. Olympia. Phil's not. He should have never won. It's that type of shit that drives me nuts. Anyway, at least it was it coming into this Olympia, we knew that it was going to be radically different. Yeah. And then people walk away from it and they're saying dumb shit like, oh, this is the worst Olympia ever. Why? Why was it the worst Olympia ever?
Dude, it was, there were so many cool stories. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. You didn't know what was going to happen. You didn't know who was going to be on.
Yeah.
And then a brand new guy wins it. And Lord, this is, one guy actually said, this is like when Samir Banu won it in 81. First, you probably aren't even that old to remember that. You just use that as some, because you assume. 81 or 80? Yeah, I don't know, 83, yeah. I think. He probably fucked his years up. But the point being, he probably didn't witness any of that anyway. And none of us did because it wasn't on fucking social media. So he would have had to actually be there, which would make him, what, fucking 60-some years old. So he's probably just playing off the fact, oh, he won it once. It was one of the anticlimactic, not as impressive Mr. Olympia. So it's not that big of a deal. And it really cuts to. That's what I'm saying. It had to be different in that sense, but all it does is make the point that I've made for so long.
What's
the
that?
Sport is a pageant, and it is anticlimactic in the sense that it's not very often is it very exciting. Like, you're not watching someone throw up a buzzer shot or a Hail Mary or something. And so people should approach it from that standpoint, but they don't. They approach it like all these surprising things should happen, and it should be so crazy and so unpredictable, and it just isn't. And I guess I wish people would take it more at face value and not have these massive high expectations, because there shouldn't be. It's cool, we have a new Mr. Olympia. It's different.
And listen, Hadi Chopin, you know, nobody knew he was coming. That's a huge storyline in itself. So that was a lot of fun. It was exciting to see. Like, we don't even know. It's not like, you know, we had been watching him all these years and, you know, seeing him battling it out and kind of had an idea. Like Rolly, you know, Rolly, we can look at him and we know, we could predict Rolly. We could be like, well, if he's on, you know, he's going to be really freaky. If he's off, he's going to be a mess type thing.
Right.
You know, that either nails it or he doesn't and that type of thing. But if he does, we know what to expect with Hadi. It was like, you don't even know what's going to happen here. And man, he looked amazing. In my opinion, the weirdest, the biggest upset was I really felt like Hadi should have taken second place. He, you know, he got beat by Bonick, and I mean, Bonick looked better at the night show. I'll give him that, but I don't know. I feel like he just, it should have been Hadi, honestly. I mean, man, he was freaky. He was absolutely freaky. I mean, dude has a crazy back, crazy legs, you know. So he was a lot of fun to watch, and he was passionate. You could see that's what's fun, man. How could you not love that show? Those guys were you know what I'm talking about, Skip. You see those guys on stage, and you see that first call out, and you see that fire in their eyes. They freaking want it. You know what I mean? They want it bad, and they're battling at that point. Man, that's so exciting. You know, How jaded are you? How much do you hate bodybuilding if you can't appreciate that? You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly. Now, and again, I mean, you know, there is that component where people will accuse me of not being passionate about it too. I don't know how that rolls. All I know is I've been following it for so long and it just becomes boring in that sense to me. So maybe I'm not as passionate about that aspect of the sport. Maybe I find it too predictable. Maybe I find it too political. Maybe I don't know. I mean, to the point where I just don't even follow it. I think I watched it. I watched it when Phil lost. And I think that's maybe the only one I've watched in 10 years. Yeah. I mean, the truth is, and I've never been there. I haven't been to Vegas when I could just go to Vegas right off the, you know, trip and go fucking play cards somewhere. And I still don't even do that. Not that I would do that, IRS, if you're listening. But the point being, I could do that and I don't even bother with that. So, you know, look, I'm going to the Arnold. That's like a big deal to me. Okay.
And I'll tell you what though, man, you don't stay plugged in because you're busy with everything else you're doing in life. That's the way I
see it. Yeah. It doesn't impact me directly. I think that's why. And there's so much negative bullshit that comes along with it that as soon as I do plug into it and pay attention, then I have to pay attention to all the other shit when I can just avoid all the negative shit.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about it on the show and then I can fucking move on.
And so, you know what though? Like you were excited when we went to the Arnold. Like then you saw it was part of your life and you had fun. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you enjoyed
being
bodybuilding.
Being involved with it is a lot more.
Yeah.
A lot more fun. So it's not that I'm not passionate about bodybuilding. I don't want to be involved with bodybuilding. I think it's just the actual show and everything that comes along with the show. Being there was fun. I mean, I told you I wrote an article about the most exciting thing I've seen at a show in a long time was the strongman event.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Real
that
man.
That was insane. How crazy that was. And that's more of I liken that more to the buzzer beater, you know, the shot going up, the buzzer and going, oh my God, it had people on their feet. And that to me was crazy. That certainly was fun, but I can't tell you who won that show. I was excited for Luke because to see something happen that you don't anticipate happening to me is fun, but we don't typically see that. It's very, you know, predictable, I guess is about the only way I can explain it. It's boring to me sometimes, if I'm being completely honest. That component of it is boring. But it wasn't always boring. So people who are watching now, and if you're invested, say you've been invested 10 years, that was me in like 97.
Yeah.
You know, 95. I have been watching and involved with bodybuilding since fucking 84. So, you know, I go back to the 88, 89, 90, the early 90s. Man, I was that kid. I'm like, oh my God, you know, Rich Gaspari is the most awesome guy ever. I mean, this guy, Lee Haney's a dick. He should have never won the Olympia. Rich Gaspari's badass. Rich Gaspari beat him. He's the Mr. Olympia, not Lee Haney. I mean, I was that guy.
That's funny.
That kid. So I've been there. Shit, man. I've done it.
Yeah. Scott, what's going on with you, man?
I'm just listening to this jaded old fuck Skip bitch and moan.
Yeah.
No, nothing much. Just been working. I followed you on social media.
Oh, you followed me. Well, thank you. So you like, I appreciate that. I appreciate your support.
On Instagram, because I don't like Facebook. Instagram's better.
Okay.
Okay, well, everybody right now who heard that, and everybody who hears this when it does come out on iTunes will immediately go to Scott's Instagram page and we'll be looking to find there's S2H. He's there's one of these S2H.
We know his name is Skip. Scott.
I happen to have more than one Instagram page.
Well, and it won't say. I'll give everybody the hint. It's not going to say S2H.
Yeah.
It's not going to say S2H. So.
But no, I'm just... just glad to be here and have Skip numb me to death with his oldness, you know.
Have you been to Vegas before, Scott?
Yeah, I lost a lot of money there before and got really drunk a bunch of times.
I was waiting to hear a story, something like that, yeah.
I could tell. I have better stories from Reno, but I used to go to this reunion thing in Reno.
Shot a man.
Some old guy.
I was waiting to go there, too.
I see me and a buddy of mine, we were playing Caribbean stud and we were betting black chips. So, you know, hundreds.
Yeah.
And we were starting to get pretty liquored up and he hit a royal flush. A straight flush.
Okay.
He bet like 500. Maybe it was 2. I don't remember. He won 10 grand. And then they had to count the cards, and the pit boss had to come down. They had to look at the cameras. Could you win that much? Next hand, I hit a full. I hit a four of a kind.
Hmm.
And then we were just on this roll. They kicked us out.
Yeah, you're damn right. I was just going to say. Yeah. I was letting you finish because I knew they were telling you to leave.
We ended up leaving out of there probably about, I don't know, 8 or 9 in the evening. I think we were up 25,000 or close to it. And we ended up I think we had $50 left at 5 in the morning.
Oh my
God. We rolled out of another casino with the sun coming up,
My God. That just wrenches my heart to think of losing. Even if you you didn't invest that much, having had it even for a moment, that's gut wrenching.
Well, if you get hammered while you're doing it, you don't remember all of it. So it's
exactly. Yeah. Drinking is so much fun. See, guys?
God, there were a ton of drunk people in Vegas. There's so many drunk people.
Well, you have to be drunk or you're not going to part with your money without being suicidal like that.
Yeah.
You have to get back home and then hate your life because they're going to feed you. If I'm not mistaken, I haven't been there, but I know in living in Black Hawk, Colorado is a casino town and all your drinks are free. As long as you're playing anything that involves money, any game.
Okay.
Drinks are free. They'll give you drinks, so you sit there and give the house all the money you want to give them.
Well, I'll be honest, though, we didn't lose it all back because somewhere in the middle of that evening or that day, night, we took a little 40-minute cab ride out to one of the finer establishments. It's about 40 miles outside of Reno. And I didn't participate. I just watched, sat around. But, yeah, there was a bunch of money spent there, too. So, Yeah, those were the days.
They had Vegas. They had like sex shops, sex stores, adult stores that were like the size of Walmart. Like I seriously don't know how many different sex toys and porn videos that exist to have a maybe I'm exaggerating. Maybe not the size of Walmart, but like the size of a CVS at least. Like we're talking like a gigantic store for like adult stuff. Which,
I haven't been there.
But now you're going to go.
No, I know. How do I say this? What you just explained is above ground, but Vegas has a very underground, adult sex / swinger.
Mm.
There are a lot of mainstream moms and dads, parents, soccer moms that pretend to go to Vegas for gambling and drinking.
Okay.
What stays in Vegas, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas is not about the money that you lose or the gambling that you do or the drinking you do. I'm telling you that line is, and it's funny too, because anybody listening to this who knows, they're laughing going, that's exactly what it is. And anybody else is like, I just thought it was like, this cute thing about, go to Vegas and what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. No, there's a very large underground lifestyle component to Vegas. And it's very, very mainstream compared to what it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
I know that's where they do.
I'll tell you a Vegas story.
Yeah.
So I used to play poker with these guys here, and a couple of them were oil guys. And I mean, I know they had money and stuff. I mean, it was obvious, but good guys. So they play in the oilman's tournament every year in Vegas. So they're like, hey, you want to go? I'm like, yeah, cool. They invited me and the guy to jet. So, one of them did. And so I roll up my big $1,000 in my pocket, like big baller, and head out to Vegas and with him, with my, my cleanest, newest t-shirt on. And we get to, we were at the Bellagio. Bellagio. And they go up to play in these tables where like no one's around. It's like private game. I mean, they're betting like $5,000, $10,000 a hand. Wow. And I'm just sitting there with my little scrubs of hundreds in my pocket.
Mm.
But it was interesting talking about the underground environment. There was there was a lot of attractive females in that room. And there was way more than there were dudes in there, it was pretty cool, one guy got hammered and started giving me a bunch of money to play. You know how guys are when they got a bunch of money, they get liquored up and they're like, oh, why aren't you playing? I'm like, oh, I'm good, bro. you know, and they're like, realize you don't have 10,000 or I'm not, I, even if I had, I wouldn't bet it on one hand. And he started throwing me all these, like these racks of black chips. I'm like, all right. I think the minimum on those tables was 500,000. Yeah. But I want some money there too. But I don't really like to play blackjack too much. I like to play poker or throw dice or something. You know?
Do you do any gambling, Skip?
No.
No? Yeah. Yeah, I don't either. I tried it last time. Okay. Yeah.
I used to play, and that's where I don't know. I was playing a lot online, and I was starting to get into it. I really actually did enjoy it.
Yeah.
The problem was, is like anything else that most people do when they want to be good at it, is you have to bury yourself in it. Yeah. And you know, a lot of these guys online, you know, are playing 3 and 4, you know, laptops at a time. And,
oh my God.
And to me, that's not enjoyable. And I don't want to, I got to the point where I'm like, you know, to get really good at this, I'm going to have to, you know, live behind these walls and not see, you know, sunshine and sit there. And a lot of the people that you play with at the lower levels, you know, they're not, I'm not saying they're bad people, but you know, I wanted to jump up a couple levels and you can't do that because you gotta, you know, you gotta get good at the, you know, good one level at a time and work yourself out, you know, work your way up. It just is what it is. And it became unappealing relatively quickly. All the extra shit that went along with it. I guess I just leave it at that. But I got out of it about 2011, which is funny because I ended up moving to a, you know, casino town or casino county.
Yeah.
And didn't spend, that I remember anyway, 15 minutes in a casino when I lived there for the couple years that we did. So
I'll be damned. No,
I got out of it. It's
something I didn't know about you, Scott. Like if you were to ask me, like, you know, do you think Scott gambled or has, you know, spent a lot of time in Reno? I'd be like, yeah, probably. I could see that, but I wouldn't have guessed it. It's something I didn't know about you.
About me?
Yeah, I didn't drink either. So, I mean, I was literally just playing because I wanted to play and get good. And I really enjoyed playing. It's just, it's kind of like golf. I don't take up golf because even though I'm, you know, I've played it a handful of times and for playing it a handful of times, I was decent. I was okay. I didn't look like I didn't belong, but yeah, I wasn't going to kick anybody's ass. It's something that you have to put in so much. There's such a huge time investment to get really good. And I'm one of those people where I'm not going to do something if I'm not going to do it really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough, man. Just like bodybuilding.
Well, you know, and there's a trick to online poker. What you're saying is you're the kind of guy.
Yeah, there's a trick. You have to know statistics and numbers.
Yeah. It's probability.
Yeah.
And but you're the kind of guy that probably can play a live game a lot better than an online game because you get a guy that's got a big stack of chips online, he's going to use probability to pressure you with big bets and knowing that you're not going to want to lose money and you'll fold probably winning hands more times than you keep them.
That's why I played both.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because you're right. There's something to be learned both ways, but that's the point. And, you know, it's like with anything else, the more hands you know, you just have to play hands. It's tens and hundreds of thousands of hands and it's, you know, it's experience like anything else. So I got to the point where I didn't want to make that investment in time is really what it come down. And because of that, for no other, I just don't play at all. It's all or none.
Well, I spent $20 last year at the Olympia and I put it in a slot machine, so, you know, $20. And then I don't know how many credits you get with that, but I literally, you know, hit the button and the thing spun around and I lost some money and I hit the button, repeated that process until my $20 was gone. Like I did not get anything. It just kept going down and down and down until I had $0. So I quit at that point and it's not my deal, but I did have a freaking blast. Do you guys have anything else that you wanted to mention? Anything we should bring up? I know, Skip, you collected some questions this week. We got a bunch of questions here. We've got some other questions from over at the Advices Radio Facebook group too. But before we get to that, was there anything we should be talking about, touching on?
I feel like it's a trick question, like I'm supposed to come back with this
response.
I just didn't wanna... I'm like, there's something here, but I can't remember what he told me to say.
I thought we were going to talk about the Olympia.
Well, we kind of did, but Skip hates the Olympia. Oh. He just said that.
So. I forgot it was the Skip Blood and Skip show.
Oh,
go ahead.
Did you watch the Olympia, Scott?
I followed you.
Oh, okay. So, well, I didn't do any coverage. So
I told you, you're like the Ed Bradley, the 60 Minutes guy. I'm following you. You're like CNN of bodybuilding.
I actually had fun, man. I had fun doing that stuff. But you know what, though? I didn't do like coverage. I just interviewed and talked. I talked to people. I wouldn't even call it interviews. I talked to people that, you know, I met, people that have been on the shows and stuff. In fact, here's my new setup here. Freaking love this thing. This is my new Sony. And I got a bunch of more content that I'm putting out here over the next week. So, guys, if you're watching this live, if you're listening to advicesradio.com, you know, or whatever affiliate, iTunes or whatever, you could go to the YouTube page, Think Big Bodybuilding Media. That's where everything's getting pushed now. And I've got some cool stuff. I got a cool conversation with Juan Morell. He told me about the time he ate 10 Big Macs. I'm sorry. Yeah. No, 10 Whoppers in 10 minutes. And then after that, he was like, he was on a bet. Somebody bet that he couldn't do 10 Whoppers. And he was like, yeah, I ate 10 Whoppers and I ate them in 10 minutes. He's like, and then after that, I was like, well, it is time for me to eat my real meal. So then he had chicken and rice right after he was done. Don't ask me how you fucking do that.
I watched him eat a gallon of ice cream one time, first thing in the morning somewhere. This is a long time ago, before he was even pro.
Yeah.
On a video somewhere. Maybe kind of hungry.
Yeah, he's got some sort of like leptin ghrelin thing that I think is off in there maybe, but that was fun though. I got a bunch more of them though that I'll be putting up, you know, over the week here as I get that stuff edited. But in that case, man, guys, let's take a really quick break. We're gonna go to our sponsor, TrueNutrition.com, and after that, we'll go to a bunch of bodybuilding questions. Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for listening to this episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear with Skip and S2H and myself. If you guys enjoy our programming, you can support us in a couple of ways. Number one, I'd really appreciate it if you guys would subscribe over at the new YouTube channel. That's Think Big Bodybuilding Media. Any of your subscriptions are much appreciated as I attempt to build this thing up. Number two, you can shop with our sponsor, TrueNutrition.com. And you can use our code, ADVICES, for some additional savings. You can also use the code ADVICESOATS to get 25% off of their oatmeal blends. I just picked up their beta-alanine. I think it's basically a lifetime supply for like $25. You know, I believe a serving of beta-alanine is like maybe 3 grams. And, you know, that's a tiny, tiny little scooper. And so this giant bag of beta-alanine is probably going to last me every workout I do for the next 20 years. I've been doubling up on the dose and seeing how that works. I, you know, mix it with my citrulline malate, which I also picked up from True Nutrition. I mix both of these things into whatever pre-workout I decide to use. And basically, I'm just I'm finding the amounts that I want to use that work best for me. So I'm having fun playing mad scientist with my products from True Nutrition. And of course, they have all of your favorite proteins, whey isolate, pea protein isolate, all sorts of other stuff, guys. Check them out. And of course, teamskip.com. You can get a hold of Skip over there at Team Skip if you want to reach out to him and work with him for either lifestyle coaching or a contest prep. You'll get a hold of Skip and talk it out with him. All right, guys, let's get back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. Hope you are enjoying the show. And with that said, welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear, guys. Scott McNally here with Skip Hill in S2H. We're going to dive straight into the questions here. This one's from Steve Parker. He says, my TRT doctor has just added a low dose of Arimidex to my meds. Can this have any side effects? The world seems a little clearer now. The world seems a little clearer now. What does he mean by that? I wonder.
Probably because estrogen was high.
That makes sense. Yeah.
He probably had like that foggy feeling.
This is a pretty basic one, you know, pretty beginner question because we're, you know, Arimidex. I'm wondering if he doesn't use gear, You know what I mean? Because if he did, he'd probably know what an estrazole was.
He said he was on TRT, though.
But I mean, gear, like, you know, had he cycled? This is new. I'm guessing this is new to him. And so for that reason, he didn't know about estrogen control. So just I'll break down the real simple thing for him. It's just that an estrazole is going to block the conversion or reduce the conversion of test to estrogen. It sounds like his doctor must have put it on it, put him on that because his estrogen was getting too high. But Scott, common side effects?
The main one you'll see in blood work is your cholesterol will start to shift. Good cholesterol go down, bad cholesterol rise. And if you don't have a good diet, it can actually make it even worse. I mean, can make it even multiply even worse. But that's the main thing you'll see with Arimidex is that shift. You can take too much of it and your estrogen could get really low. I particularly have been on it for years, but like the doctor I have now, I talked to him about Aromasin and he kind of gave me that look like, you know, I was from outer space because he didn't really know what it was, I don't think. But when I went back for a revisit, he said we could rehash it the next time. So he must have looked up what it was. But even when I told him I was on Arimidex, he kind of looked at me out of some space on that one too. But what I noticed was he looked up all my prescriptions because I switched doctors.
Okay.
That I had gotten prescribed to me through the register system, through the pharmacies to make sure they probably do that to make sure you're not bullshitting them. And so he was fine with it. I don't think he really knew much about it, but, I like to be, if you can get them to prescribe Aromasin, it's doesn't affect your cholesterol, nearly as much or hardly at all. The thing about it is it's expensive. And it's that it doesn't have a generic form. Usually when you go to the pharmacies and can be really pricey, but if you go to Costco, it's really cheap. So a friend told me.
What are we talking?
Costco's $42.
$42.
30 tabs.
Okay.
Or you can get a Arimidex generic for, Arimidex generic for I think it's like $7 or something.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I mean, but you just cholesterol, you know, LDL, HDL gets kind of spun around on you. But other than that, you know, other than driving your estrogen too low, if you could do that, you just got to keep an eye on it.
We have a question we could actually tie into this, Skip. This is somebody posted this over at the Advices Facebook group. He said, there's a huge push on a board I frequent saying that estrogen is anabolic in itself. They have been advising people not to run an AI unless you start to see gyno symptoms. You don't build more muscle with high estrogen than you would with normal E2 levels, right?
Yeah, that's just fucking stupid.
Yeah, there's a lot of people doing that now.
I can't even, you know, and I'm not saying that the person who posted that information or is asking about it is stupid. What I'm saying is anybody who would sit on a board, of course, I'm not surprised, it being the internet and everything. But to say something as fucking stupid as, you don't need to control estrogen until or if you see gyno symptoms, whoever said that needs to take a long walk off a short plank. That's just fucking, it's just horrible. And you know what? It's the bane of internet information. Yeah. So. And I know what you're thinking. You're like, oh, this motherfucker is in a bad mood. I can see it.
No, but I get it, man. I get it.
But you know what? Even if I was in a good mood, I might have said it nicer than that. But I just can't believe the things that people will say. It surprises me. And it shouldn't because I fucking heard everything, I swear, these days. Man. But, yeah, it just surprises me. Scott, help me out here.
Well, I mean, I think let me say it this way. I think a lot of people think they try to keep their estrogen like in this perfect range, and you know, high normal is not bad. So there's kind of a twofold thing to it. One is estrogen binds to the androgen receptor, so that's not a good thing. The old parking lot theory, you know, how many parking spaces do you have for your car for
right.
Testosterone being the cars. You want the most parking spaces. Now there's, you know, estrogen, the conversion to it in aromatase does have some benefits, but it's, you're kind of walking that line of, okay, can I get more out of that conversion process, or can I get more out of, you know, the other 25% of my free testosterone is not binding to bind? Because you had to remember, total testosterone is kind of a, it's an obsolete number in some ways. It's really the free testosterone that binds. Mm-hmm. And most people's free testosterone is not very high, even when they're maximizing everything in their program. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, you can have a 1,000 nanogram per deciliter total test, but you're free, you know, if it's 250, 275, that's pretty damn good. Yeah. And it's high. That's out of normal range, but it's still pretty high. That's, you know, that's about where you, some people would be. And so you don't have as many little parked cars to park. So you don't want your parking spaces taken up. So, I mean, I'm okay with it being kind of high normal as long as everything else works out. But I mean, as far as running it way, I've seen the arguments on it. It's okay. What's more important, binding free testosterone or getting the effects of aromatase in there with a higher estrogen level and getting that flushed into the muscle and all that stuff? I still say just run it, keep it, you know, mid to high level, whatever, and just keep it around there. And that'll probably be the maximum benefit.
Yeah. And I think too, I mean, it's not like you don't make good points there, but the original post didn't say anything, you know, like that. So we're adding that information to what was already said. I'm only going after the one comment that basically, you know, is saying not to worry about it until you have gyno symptoms. That's the part I'm taking issue with more than anything else. But I agree with you, Scott. I mean, there are a lot of people who feel that that estrogen has to be, you know, ridiculously low, and it has to be within these parameters. There can't be these fluctuations, and that I don't agree with either. You know, I agree with you. So, but that other is what I take issue with. I think that's pretty irresponsible information.
Because yeah. you can get gyno with just mildly or
sure.
Semi, you know, you can get gyno with in range estrogen numbers, especially higher in some people, because the estrogen is not, for one thing, it's not always a thing that causes gyno.
Right.
I mean, it can contribute, and there's other factors in that. I mean, it's like kind of saying, hey, I'm going to bang a bunch of whores with no rubbers on until I finally get AIDS and start fucking losing weight and get the flu. You know, it's like up until that point, I'm good to go.
Well, it's almost too like saying, I think a lot of people have this bizarre thought process that says, and I'm using an arbitrary number to make my point that, oh, well, you know, at 130, then that's when people, you know, everybody gets gyno. Like there's not like everybody is the fucking same or something. So that's a good point that probably did need to be mentioned.
Have you guys heard there's this guy, Jay Campbell, and his new thing that he's promoting is that you don't need this is for test HRT. Really, I think is what he's focusing on. But he says that you don't need any AI ever, that you should never take it, that if you are getting issues, then the answer is to lower your test. Because
I'm not going to disagree with the basic thought process behind that. I'm not going to disagree. And someone listening might think, well, that's God, you're contradicting yourself. Yeah, I'm not.
But you're talking HRT for this guy.
Yeah, exactly. Number one, you're talking HRT. Two, what I don't like and take issue with medications, especially when it comes to PCT or how should I say ancillaries or drugs that counter other drugs is a good way. In this industry, we have this horrible habit or pattern of, well, I'm taking this, so I have to take this because it's going to counter this. Yeah. And I don't agree with that. I've never agreed with that. You take another drug if it has been proven that you need the other fucking drug.
Right.
And that's where, you know, things like PCT drive me fucking nuts. Most people just naturally, I have to do PCT because how am I ever going to recover? Well, before PCT, motherfucker, there were people recovering from cycles all the time because we didn't have PCT. Do you know that you need PCT to recover? Well, no. Well, then find out for fuck's sake, because otherwise you're taking more drugs to counter drugs when you don't know you need to take more drugs. And that's a good example. If you're running HRT, there are a lot of people who are not going to have estrogen issues on 200, 250 milligrams of testosterone. There are a lot. But naturally what happens, and it happens the large majority of the time, is even with these anti-aging doctors and clinics, they don't even bother to test to see if the client needs the anti-estrogen. They assume it. And I'll tell you, part of the reason they assume it is because these motherfuckers are making money off of the drugs they're selling you too. So yeah, it's twofold, which is surprising to me, to be honest with you, that these anti-aging clinics don't prescribe AromaCenter XMSA more than they do, and they're excuse is because it's so expensive. All they're going to do is make more money. I don't know why they're, you know, maybe it's because they get the Arimidex so cheap. I'm being presumptive here, but this is probably why. They get the Arimidex so cheap anyway that they overprice that to the client. And they're already making such a huge profit margin that if they did that with Aromacin, because the raws and the compound actually cost more money to get, they'd have to charge an astronomical amount of money to be able to make the same profit percentage or profit margin. That may be why. I don't know.
I can see that.
But they are. They're prescribing those compounds, and they don't even know that you need them yet.
I mean, there's to that part about the TRT, and you don't need a aromatase inhibitor. I mean, there's no absolutes to anything, okay? Because I can tell you right now, I've got to take one, and I'm on TRT because at my age, I just happen to aromatize a lot of testosterone to estrogen. And, you know, one of the things back when we were doing the show with Taylor way back, man, I used to get blood work sent to me. I mean, by the freaking, I couldn't tell you how much. I think one time I volunteered to look at people's, and I mean, I looked at it all. I mean, it was hundreds and hundreds over that whole course of that thing. Hmm. And everyone's different. I mean, there's no absolute with supplements, with, you know, any of this stuff. There just isn't. Not everybody's the same. And there's not some everybody. People that I'm,
go ahead.
I mean, there's large different disparities between, you know, let's just say males of the same age that are similarly taking the same programs. I mean, there are huge discrepancies in it. Some of it's diet related. Some of it's just so a lot of it's genetics. I mean, they're, you know, their DNA, and there's, I mean, yeah, there are some commonalities a lot of times, but there's also a lot. It's a big bell curve, let's just say. Mm-hmm. And to say that something's an absolute is just, I don't see that. And I there's no way I could support that because it's just not true. You got, like Skip said, you got to look at people individually and assess what's going on. And because they're all different, everybody's different, you know?
Let me ask you this though. And I understand that I'm asking you to make a blanket statement, or it may sound that way. I'm not really asking you to make a blanket statement as much as I'm asking you, if you take, say, randomly 100 and even 100 of the blood panels that you've seen, do you think the majority of those people need an anti-estrogen, or the majority would be okay without one?
On each of them, just being that they're supplementing the same things.
Yeah, you know, if you just said the average person uses, you know, 200 milligrams of Cypionate, and I understand there's different variables. There's no question. I think the listeners do too, because we've made that pretty clear. You know, we can't say what the age demographic is. That we just say people who are on TRT that you. If we took 100 listeners who are on TRT and they just sent you their blood work, 100 people, would you expect that the majority, 51 or more of those 100, need to be on an anti-estrogen, or would they be okay to not be on an anti-estrogen?
Well, let me caveat that a little bit. So, if I had to look at just their blood work and couldn't see them, how their physique looked, talk to them, know anything else about them, and defining that aromatase inhibitor would be needed for a high or over high level of estrogen out of 100, I'd say probably 30%, 30 of them would out of 100. Mm-hmm. If that was the prescribing guideline, that they had high estrogen, so over right. the limit or right at it. Now, I will say this, if you gave me 100 of them of guys that were 45 or older, it'd be way more than 30%.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It would be, if you gave me 100 of them that were guys that were 20 to 25, it would be less than 30%,
right?
Most likely. That was, and this is just a generalization. It's not something that's, you know, I'm just saying that in a younger male, generally, a TRT dose probably won't require an aromatase inhibitor.
Right.
But in an older male, it will.
It becomes more likely. Yeah, I'd agree with that. That's why I asked you that question. And, you know, obviously there's tons of variables from age to dose to you name it. I get that. But yeah. What you said, I'm in line with, and I completely agree. That's why when you said that, I was thinking, yeah, we're on the same page as usual, because I feel the same way.
I've seen plenty of guys that are taking 800 milligrams to a gram a week of test only or not taking an aromatase inhibitor, and their estrogen is in range.
No kidding. Wow.
And their testosterone is like fucking sky high. I mean, 2,500 or whatever. You know, that depends on when they injected, but, you know, really high numbers, well over, you know, top of the line for, you know, their age group. So, I mean, it just depends. But another thing, too, is, you know, people start mixing stuff together, like start hearing DHTs or hard androgens in there, you know, and they might be on a lot of tests. They may not need as much or need as much of an aromatase inhibitor. It just depends on what they're doing. You know, are they already overweight? Are they already have high body fat? Are they really lean? That makes it vary, too. Mm-hmm. You know, their diet and everything. So, yeah, I'd say that most guys that do a lot of cardio seem to need less, you know, lower aromatase, you know, inhibitors in their program.
Yeah, but is that due directly to the cardio, or are you saying the cardio indirectly?
These are all anecdotal, just observations. You know, could there be other factors in there? There could be, right. But you know, you see the duck walk. A lot of ducks walk. You know, it's kind of like it is what it is. You know, but yeah, older guys though, for sure, they're going to have trouble in a way higher percentage than younger with an HRT dose. So. With conversion.
I just want to make sure I understand. Basically, you're saying if it walks like a duck.
Quacks like a duck. It is a duck.
All right, just making sure we're on the same page.
I got to say, I really wanted to move on to the next one since we were talking about this so much. I think I'm opposite, that my sensitivity to estrogen in my conversion has gone down with age, Scott. I don't know why that is, but I used to be like super, super sensitive, and that like I was prone to get gyno, and now it's like if I forget to take Arimidex, even if my estrogen goes high, it's like I don't have issues, and it tends to be more. I tend to be more likely to crash my estrogen than anything else now, it seems.
Well,
like,
I mean, a lot of people don't have issues with it, like gyno or
I mean, really, like I'll tend to crash.
Feel much different. Now. Well, I know how old you are, so you're at that age where this is an anecdotal, but I've seen it.
Yeah.
And I went through the same thing where about your age, I was like, man, this is, for some reason, I didn't really need much of it. My numbers weren't bad.
Yeah.
And man, buddy, I hit about mid 40s. That shit shot up.
But what I mean is it used to be really bad. Like when I was younger, like when I first started gear, especially, like my sensitivity was like like everything. Like I had to take a lot of AI. I don't know. I mean, I know I'm just one individual, so I'm not trying to be like, oh, you're wrong because of this is how I respond.
Are you basing that on blood work or how you felt?
On blood work. Yeah. Okay. And then I found, because I found it's even hard now to control. Like I'll crash my estrogen super easy with Arimidex. Like I have to be really careful with it. So it's weird. It's been.
But this is how much. Yeah, really. And that doesn't
party.
Well, like, the other thing too, to make the point about how so many people, like there could be these big disparities between individuals and individual circumstances. I mean, shit, I could run 1,000 milligrams a test, 1,200 milligrams a test, Anadrol, other compound. And I mean, there were times where I didn't run any AI. And I have come across one, and I understand, because I don't want anybody to think I'm contradicting myself. I understand that it's not just about gyno, but I'm using gyno as a to make a point, I've only dealt with gyno symptoms one time in my life. And I took something for about 4 days and it literally went away. And those are the only issues I've had after using gear for 30 years. So maybe 25 years. No, almost 30 years, actually. Anyway, like it matters. I'm going to argue with myself. 25. No, 30, 28, 20. It doesn't matter. It's fucking forever, okay? It doesn't really matter. Anyway, you know, these days I can run 800-900 tests and, you know, run Anadrol. And I'm trying to think of what else might even be in there. I mean, I don't run a lot of compounds that are highly, you know, that aromatase – you know, that aromatize all that sharp, but shit, I mean, the max I ever usually have to run an AI is a Remedex at, you know, three times a week. I mean, I'm just not. And then I can come across a client that I was talking to Scott just a couple of days ago about has a natural testosterone level of roughly 675, 700, something like that, in that area. And has to use 25 milligrams of aromacin every day and still has an estrogen issue that estrogen level is 80 or 90.
Yeah. See,
so, I mean, you have those, you know, you just sometimes you, there are these huge. And I bring all this up for the listeners so that they understand that it's so individual and there can be huge disparities from one person to the next for variables that you might not even see or might not even notice or think would be significant.
All right. I'll go on to the next question. There's a couple of them about the show because I did mention an Olympia talk in that post I made. We'll skip down to, I have one that might be kind of interesting. I will say that one of the questions about the Olympia was what do we think about the conditioning in this year's open class? And I'll just say, I know you guys weren't watching, but
I followed you.
Friday was I was disappointed overall, and then Saturday everybody brought it, and that's the weird thing about the Olympia is it's almost like, well, does Friday not count? You know, like prejudging, does it just not count? Because a lot of times it's like everybody comes in and they show up and then they're like, well, OK, you know, this guy's looking soft. Like everybody who brought it. Well, besides Hottie was crazy both times. But I even thought Brandon, who's my guy who I wanted to win. I felt like, oh, man, I hope he tightens up. I hope he looks harder, you know, for the night show, for finals. But, you know, it wasn't crazy conditioning, like classic to me. You know, and I think Victoria mentioned that, like, classic brought some crazy conditions. So, I mean, I don't know, man. Are they pushing too hard? Although there's this guy, you guys should look him up, Patrick Moore. He's a new guy, and he looked fucking outstanding. Like,
yeah, really, he's Chris's. He's a Chris Aceto guy.
Okay, yeah. He was outstanding.
I follow. Look, I got to make sure that people understand. I follow and I pay attention. I don't follow it like most people do, to the point where I know every move and know what's going on. And I got to get my 2 cents in here on the conditioning too. And I think it's important.
I didn't want to put you on the spot because I didn't think you followed enough. All right, good, good.
And I appreciate that. I just, here's where I'm speaking up because I think this is important. I think a lot of people lose track. There's a couple main things that are playing into people's perspective on it. Number one, we have very, very high expectations of the competitors at this level.
Sure.
Okay. That's for starters. Number two, and I think this is equally as important, if not more important, Phil Heath dominated open bodybuilding as Mr. Olympia for, you know, 7 years with basically a pretty consistent, he didn't have a problem with conditioning, let's put it that way. He could go flat and end up in the ER and he still looked like a bad motherfucker.
I bet. Yeah.
There were, you know, it's not like it, from year to year, show to show, he showed up with different levels of fullness. It's not that he didn't, but with these big disparities, like, oh, geez, is he going to be tight? Is he going to be full? Is he going to be dry? For the most part, he looked pretty fucking consistent every time he showed up. I think that spoiled a lot of people because people lose track of the fact that this balance of conditioning to fullness for people at this level, it's a motherfucker. You're dealing with some of the best, well, you're dealing with the best prep guys in the industry at that point. And when you have these these swings and, you know, well, is he going to be in shape? Oh, I'm really disappointed with Lunsford. I'll tell you, when I heard how bad Lunsford was, I had to make it a point to go see. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, you guys, come on. I mean, you know, was he soft and watery? He was. And he fixed the situation. You fix it. You see where you are. You're trying to hold condition with the best bodybuilders on the fucking planet.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always go on. I think Phil Viz said something like this a couple days before the Olympia too, and I couldn't agree more. Our expectations are pretty fucking high. And I think that's where it becomes frustrating, because a lot of the people who are – I'm not sure what that is.
I thought it was at your house, but now we know where it's coming from.
A lot of people who are complaining the most, and make no mistake, look, you know, we have a show. We talk about these things.
Yeah.
That's gonna happen. But when you see these people on social media, and they're the ones almost like the biggest critics, they really don't, the large majority of the time, understand what the fuck they're talking about. They don't understand the level. They don't understand. It's almost like the expectation is they should just, everything should be perfect. They're pros, and they should just show up, and they should look bad at us all the time. And that's not fair.
Dude, that's a huge point.
It's just not realistic.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. It really is.
It would be that much more fucking boring than it already is, because if Raleigh shows up and he's full and he's shredded, he's probably going to fuck some people up. But that's part of, I'm glad for that. I'm glad that part isn't as predictable, because it adds the element of, you still got to fucking get it right. You can do everything right. It's not fair. You have to get off the ground. Oh my God, that's driving me batshit crazy. It is. You can hear it. Anyway.
You do. Now, yeah.
Anyway, you drive me crazy.
That's, I know it's you too, you fucker. It's like someone's backing up a semi to a loading dock.
With the camera.
I don't even know
that well. The PC either. Shows and stuff.
And then I'm just gonna sit here real and not even move for a minute, so it looks like I'm frozen. But I'm not. Jesus Christ, man!
You should be a comedian.
What was your point, Scott?
I don't remember. People got to remember something. The Olympia is not judged off the prejudging. They wait for the night show because
it's supposed to be,
it's hard 50%. To hold conditioning 2 days. But listen to me. So the reason it's judged off the night show mostly is because that's when all the people are watching. All the people get on the internet and hoot and holler about this. So they can't. I mean, unlike an NPC show, which is basically the placings are done after prejudging.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part, where the Olympia is, it's kind of in reverse order. Because, you know, that's when everybody's there. And, you know, it's hard to hold, because some of the stuff these guys are doing to get the way they look on the night show the second day, they can't do that 2 days in a row. So, you know,
to agree. I don't know that there's anything that has ever been, you know, discussed or said that what you're saying is true. But I will say that I could see that is likely. And the main reason for that is, you know, I think the judging that they talk about after the first show, after, you know, prejudging or whatever you want to call it, the first day, it's more for fan involvement, more for hype, more for PR. I could see where that could play a part. And I think we have seen where there doesn't appear to be a whole lot of truth to the fact that both days are judged separately, because it hasn't had an impact on the outcome.
You know, you're right, because I can think of a number of times, like I remember Phil coming in where it's like he didn't look great and he really lost prejudging, but then he looked great and then he won the finals. You know, like if you look good at finals, that's your I think you guys are probably right about that.
I think that's just more important. Now, if they do judge it separately or whatever, okay, maybe they could. But I have a feeling that the night show, I'm with Scott, and I think we're all on the same page. I would say that the night show or the final show, the second day, has a much more of an impact on who wins. It just kind of fits not the narrative, but I mean, it just fits, because I haven't seen anything that tells me otherwise.
Yeah.
And I got to go pee, so y'all continue without me for a minute.
Wait, what are we going to do without Scott on the screen?
I don't know. We're going to listen to him fuck with the bathroom door, put the lid up, maybe not put the lid up, piss all over everything, flush the toilet.
All right, here. Next question is, what is the biggest piece of advice each of you would give a gym rat who wants to be a competitor? I've been a pretty hardcore gym rat for about 4 years and would love to step on stage at least once. And he is 35 years old.
Piece of advice. I mean, it sounds kind of generic, I guess, but you know, if you want to compete, I don't have anything, I guess, that I can say or that I can think of that would be so profound that would make him go, oh yeah, that's a really good piece of advice. I mean, if you feel like doing it and you're wondering what the other side looks like, then check it out. It's not for everybody. A lot of people will talk about how they did it and they were bitten and they fell in love with it, even though they got their ass kicked and they didn't, you know, they weren't top five. They loved it. And that's great. And there are other people though that you don't hear about them because they don't come back and tell you. But there are other people like my wife who'll do it, and it's anticlimactic even if they do well. And they're like, I fucking hated everything about it, and I got nothing out of it, and I'll never do it again. Yeah. So do it. I guess my best advice is if you want to do it, do it. I think that if there's a piece of advice, I would say this. Until you experience it, mm-hmm. I don't think people truly understand. You can watch people do it.
Yeah, you can't know.
You can't know how incredibly difficult it really is to do everything right.
Dude, I remember my first show. I was like blown away by how much you had to put in. And it's not like that I was bitching about it. I was just like, I was surprised. You know what I mean? I had a coach. It was funny because I tried to diet on my own and I didn't get super far. Like I dieted for a summer and I got into shape, but I wasn't contest shape. You know, so I was like, okay, I'm going to try this again. And the way I met my coach is a weird story, but get this. So I was posting on RX Muscle saying I wanted to compete and stuff. And this guy messaged me. He didn't message me. He commented back, okay, on RX Muscle. And, I was saying I wanted to do a show. It was in Michigan. And he was like, oh, right on. You know, he was like, well, listen, if you want somebody to. Yeah, that's very, very professional.
We're just gonna wait. Yeah. We're just gonna wait. And hey, Scott, just let us know when you're situated. We have all the furniture in your room moved,
reorganized. Yeah.
Exactly. Hold on, I'm getting comfortable.
When you're done blowing up the balloon, you're blowing whatever the fuck you're doing. Oh, you're set. I think are good now.
Yeah. But anyway, though, he became my first coach. He like lived in the area, became a very good friend of mine, and he helped me get into good shape. And I worked with him for a few years. Shout out to Rick Wetmore. But I was so surprised. And then my girlfriend, she watched me go through that, you know, like how much work I had to do. And then she was inspired to do it. So she tried it the next year. And when she did it, I'll never forget the words. She was like, I thought that you were being a baby this whole time, that you were like exaggerating on how hard it was. I got so much satisfaction out of that, Skip, mm-hmm. like so much satisfaction. She's like, yeah, she never told me that, but she was, you know, until she went through it, but she's like, yeah, I thought you were just like exaggerating, like you're being dramatic about it. She's like, no, that shit was, but you really, I'm just going off your point, man. You really can't know how difficult a contest prep is, like what it's all about until you do it. Man, when I did it, I fell in love with it.
Some of the listeners, if they're hardcore competitors and you know, they're all or nothing type people, they're not going to agree with me, and that's fine. Yeah. But there are still, whether you like it or not, two types of competitors. There's the competitor that's going to go 100% and just wants to create a situation where they just want the best opportunity to win. And then there's the other client who they're going to do the very best they can, and they want to experience it. And it doesn't have to be, 100%. They're okay with 98%. They're okay with their best effort. And that doesn't explain everybody. And I understand that. And some of us that are OCD and are 100%, we're all in. We can't relate to not doing something like this 100%. But those are your two types of competitors. And it does matter because you know, if you can't do something 100%, but you want to experience it, and it's going to be your best condition, and it's going to blow away anything you've ever looked like, and that's going to be something that potentially pulls you into a sport or a situation where down the line I want to do this 100%, like, oh my god, you might be halfway through the process and decide, oh my god, and find yourself going at 100% because you can't stand the thought of getting on stage and being judged and not have done it or not doing it 100%. So there's a lot of components there. And you know, if you'd asked me 15 years ago or 20 years ago when I got into prepping, if I would support that person who wasn't 100%, my answer would have been no, because all I did was contest prep and it was all or none. And if you weren't, you know, if you weren't going to do 100%, fuck you, go work with somebody else who was. I'm older now. I work with different types of people and different types of competitors. And some of those people are not going to be the 100% people. It just is what it is. So my answer is different now than it would have been 15, 20 years ago.
My advice would be go to teamskip.com.
Yeah, do that.
As long as you pay, he doesn't care about your effort.
No, I mean, I'll tell you what. That's a half truth. Business is business. And I'm not going to sit over here and tell somebody, because here's what you have to understand, too, is that person may have already been turned away from five other people who have said, oh, fuck that, you're not hardcore enough, you're not badass enough. Because a lot of people who do what we do don't come from a very smart business background. And they think, well, I'm not going to work with someone who's not hardcore. Okay, then don't. And that's your business model. And okay, good for you. But there are people who will. And there are people that understand that if this is going to be your best effort, this is part of my business. I'm not ashamed to say that if someone comes to me and says that they don't know if they can do it, and this is the first time they've competed and they've approached three other people, I might not be too happy that I was the fourth person they approached. But the point being, it's still business. So yeah, I may not turn that person away. There's also, and I won't get into it too much to become long-winded, but there are cues that because I've been doing this for so many years, that I pick up from a potential client where I may see something in that client that I feel that I can build on, or there's something enticing or intriguing there that I think I want to work with that client, so I will. If they're not 100% and I don't see that there's a connection there or something I can do for them, then I'll pass on them. There's variables in there that, but I will say, look, I run a business. I'm passionate about what I do, but I run a fucking business to make money. And I'm not going to take out a bunch of people who are going to make me look bad. I've got a track record and a reputation I have to watch out for. But at the same time, business is business. And a lot of people who do what we do don't see it as a business. What the fuck is he doing now?
Go to the live feed.
Well, uh-oh.
Just go to live.
I don't even know why I don't have it up. Oh shit! But I got to go to your page because I didn't. Why didn't I put it up on mine?
I just go to the. Yeah, we're so far in. Just go to live feed for a second. Let's see. We'll move on to we got a question here. This is a topic somebody brought up.
Guy is such a dick. Fuck! This guy is a piece of work. And, oh my god. I actually thought it was a shot. I don't know if it is. Maybe it's a shot at me, or maybe he's just fucking bored.
I put that up.
Oh, I got you.
Shit. We had the avatar for you, Scott, but your screen is black now. The room is completely black. And so for that reason.
That's because I have my eyes closed.
Yeah, exactly. He's once he got situated, he's pretty much out.
After listening to the old wise man give me his... You know,
I wouldn't have said anything if you didn't make the comment that you did, but I had to respond to that because there is a business component there that I'm not going to skip over. I won't act like it doesn't matter like most people do.
I know you're like the Bill Gates of coaching.
I'm not the Bill Gates of coaching, but I'll tell you what, I do think that more people, and this could be a topic for another time, but more people need to approach what we do with more of a business mind. And then they do just, well, this is what I do, and I'm going to turn around and make my... Once you spend some time doing what you do, you become more business-minded, and you start making better decisions based on not just, well, I only work with people who are fucking hardcore. There's a business component that you learn over time.
Yeah. Thanks, Dad.
So you know... you know that. I'm not telling you. I'm responding to what you're saying, and I know you well enough that you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's a business component there. You have a business mind. You think that way. But a lot of people who are just getting in, these newbie type, you know, they don't see the business for what it is. It's all about their passion, and it's all about it. They haven't gotten to that point where they're making decisions based on a business, more from a business perspective. And I'm admitting to it. That's all I'm saying.
All right, I got a topic here, and I, you know, I'll add one thing though. Also, when you say business minded, you're talking to somebody who has been doing online coaching for a long, long time. Skip, you're not just a guy who like picked this up and is doing it off of Instagram as a hobby. No, this is advice coming from somebody who literally has made an entire career and supported a family and has a nice home, you know, and all that. So that's pretty badass. And, you know, something to be said. Anyway, Sally has a topic that I thought was interesting. Why do women's bodybuilding communities flip out when you use the word bulk or mass to describe a period of training to grow muscle? It's my understanding that bulk, mass, build, etc., are all used interchangeably, and that it's the context of discussion athlete that establishes that we don't mean going out to eat donuts until target weight and expect it all to be muscle. So I guess what she's saying here is, you know, the idea of bulking. I mean, can you understand where we're going here, Skip?
Well, I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's semantics. I mean, she's arguing the semantics of it, right?
Yeah, that they don't like the idea of bulking. I'll even tell you, man, you know, I
don't think that's true though.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm married to individual body.
Does she, no, let me ask you this then, Scott, how would she respond if someone came up to her and was like, you're fucking huge?
That would be good, but that she wouldn't mind those terms or any of that, but you're talking about the older generation of female bodybuilders, not the new, because there is no, these days, I mean, in the mainstream competitive, I mean, there are female bodybuilding leagues, but I mean, when it was an Olympia sport, when they were, the gals were really a lot bigger than anything you see on the Olympia stages anymore. I don't think those type of people would shy away or find those terms, you know, offensive or something they didn't want to hear, but you know, that's just my, I mean, but that's a different animal than what you're seeing in the sport now, you know?
And speaking of which, it was interesting. Jake Wood of Wings of Strength was a title sponsor for the Olympia. I think them and Trifecta both were, you know, major contributors. And Victoria pointed out, she's like, it's really ironic that Wings of Strength is a title sponsor of the Olympia when the Wings of Strength basically exists because the Olympia kicked female bodybuilding out. You know, they didn't have a place to go, so they created basically the women's Olympia of bodybuilding at Wings of Strength, you know, Rising Phoenix. But now,
and he's a sponsor.
Yeah. Now though, it turns out they made the announcement they're bringing it back. So next year there's going to be women's bodybuilding at the Olympia. So that's cool to see.
So I don't think your true female bodybuilders would not be turned off by those terms. But I think in outside of that group, but that subgroup of a group, I mean, in women in general don't want to hear about mass and bulk. I mean, that's just kind of a, you know, they don't think in those terms.
You know? I think it's an individual thing too. Like, you know, because I know that I dated a women's physique competitor, but she would get very upset if somebody was like, dude, she's like, how much do you weigh? You look like you're 170. She got some girls would get very temperamental, but that's an individual thing. I don't know how, you know, I don't know how every girl would respond, but I can see where she's coming from. You know, a lot of girls, I remember, there was a woman who was a national level, figure girl. And I wasn't used to seeing, this is like when I first got into competing, and she went to my gym and she's getting ready for a show. And I remember telling her, I was like, oh my God, you look so big. And she was getting ready to compete. And she like did a double take at me. And I could tell like, oh, I said the wrong thing. This is, you know, years and years ago. And she, I mean, by standards, she's not huge, but for a girl, she had like crazy capped delts and a wide back, you know, she was a good figure competitor, and that was not the word she wanted to hear. I could tell immediately after I said it.
I'll tell you what, I would go, and I'll ask you guys what you think. I don't think the, and this may not even be along the lines, I might be going off here on a little tangent, so if I am, pull me back in, but the idea of, you know, bulking in the off season, I don't think is anything like it used to be as recently as 10 years ago. The day-to-day look of the average competitor for marketing purposes really can't, they can't afford to do that anymore, or they feel like they can't afford to do that is a better way to put it, because it will cut into their marketing and PR and how they look and that sort of thing. So I think that the term bulking may still have that antiquated off season fat as fuck connotation, and that might be part of what they don't like about it. You know, the other thing too is, as a society, this may not be an industry thing, as a society we have to constantly change the labels and the wording of things. And I hate to say this because I don't want to turn this into somebody getting pissed off or anything else, but you know, you can't call a certain group of people what you could call them, you know, for 5 years ago. There have been two upgrades to that word for, and I'm not talking specifically like I'm trying to be cryptic about it. All I'm saying is, whether you go to the, you know, the gay community, the African-American community, any type of community that we have, disabilities, you know, you can't say someone is, I mean, everything that we used to, the words we used to use 5 years ago are now offensive. And if you have not progressed to using the most current PC word for something, so maybe it's not an industry thing. Maybe it's a societal thing where it just, as soon as you, you know, there, maybe there's a shelf life for these words and these descriptions, and they leave bad taste in people's mouth. I don't know. Sure. I'm not sure. My point that I was, the point that I'm trying to make is, I think that the bulking, the idea of bulking is not as appealing as it used to be, because it used to basically be substituted for you're fat as fuck and you're just basically saying you're growing, right, when you're eating everything that isn't fucking nailed down and you're not in very good condition at this point, so we're going to call it bulking. You know, we've heard it called dirty bulking, and there's a myriad of terms, but you don't see people just really getting fat as fuck anymore under the guise of off-season growth.
Yeah. While you've been talking, I put up a bunch of pictures of Lee Priest eating the KFC and stuff. You know, that was that era, you know, like that was okay back then.
But they didn't have to maintain that condition, because that's during the era where you didn't see somebody, professional bodybuilders didn't even have pictures taken.
Yeah.
They weren't shredded, because the only time you would ever see them would be in magazines. And this is no shit. And people might think this is really fucking stupid, but when I was a teenager in the '80s, okay, I really thought that I had to be, I had to stay lean and ripped all the time, because that's what I thought bodybuilders did. Because the only way that I knew how they looked was from the magazines, and they were never not in shape. Hmm. It took me to get through my teenage years before I realized, oh fuck, I just wasted a lot of this time that I could have been growing, because I didn't know these fuckers were fat in the off season. I mean, it's back when you used to prep. They would prep for 8 weeks and shit. A prep was 8-10 weeks. I mean, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
It's crazy. It was such a different, and I understand I'm dating myself with that, but it was such a different time, because you did not see these people. And, you know, I don't even know that people, pros, guest posed unless they were close to shows either, because I remember seeing guest posers, and they looked great when I saw them as guest posers. So I just naturally assumed everybody, these motherfuckers, were in shape all the time. And that was not the case.
Scott, you got anything else to throw in there?
I stay in shape all the time.
How's your diet going, by the way? You've been down.
I'm doing good. I think I lost, 21 pounds, and I kind of leveled out, but
you're good. Doing well.
I'm transitioning, because I started back on HRT. I don't know, what was it, 3 or 4 weeks ago? So it's kind of kicked in. So nice. No, I'm doing pretty good. I did I'm busting out some serious cardio. I've had some old injuries still bother me, so I still can't lift like I used to. But you know, I'm pretty sexy. So, you know, I think pretty hot.
Right on.
That's what I tell myself. I mean, I'm not Skip hot.
We can tell by your picture.
Yeah. But yeah, it's coming along. It's coming along. You know, I don't eat any junk food or you know that kind of stuff. So one day I'll be like Skip when I grow up.
Hopefully. Yeah, I doubt it. Is that picture of Lee Priest? Was that that was Photoshop? I don't see it up there now. Photoshopped, right? I went back to look at it and I couldn't see it.
Which one?
The one on the right where he was in great shape. Was it Photoshop?
I don't know, man.
Damn, see, I wish it was up. It's not up now.
I'll send it to you after. It was just like it showed up before and after. It was from, I don't know if they Photoshopped it, but it was, they did have magazine, you know, pictures. That was from that article, you know, where they're talking about. Then like
it wasn't. I just thought that it was kind of, and I only got to see it very briefly, and I don't have my glasses on. That's why I'm kind of squinting as much as I am. But anyway, I saw it, and I went back to look at it because I thought, oh, shit, that looked kind of cartoonish. But that motherfucker could look cartoonish sometimes, so there's that.
Yeah, I just texted it to you.
Okay. I'll see if I can see it without my glasses.
Mm. That's it, by the way, guys. We're out of questions at this point. Guys, we'd love to have some more questions from you. I just bumped up the thread over at the Advices Facebook group.
That is so Photoshopped.
If you haven't, is it?
It has to
be. I don't have it up now. His arms were crazy, man. But
fucked up. Yeah. No, that's Photoshopped.
His arms were crazy, but I'm not looking at it right now. I can't see it. But yeah, guys, as I was saying, if you want to take part in the show, the next episode, you know, Blood, Sweat, and Gear, we record this thing every other week on Sunday at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. So come and hang out with Skip, S2H, and myself. This is going to go over to Think Big Bodybuilding Media for the video version. So if you aren't subscribed over there, definitely subscribe and hit the bell so that you can get all the notifications. I'm putting out a bunch of stuff from the Olympia. Plus all our new programs that we have coming out like this and Muscle Minds, Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. And, of course, It's Just Bodybuilding with Ron and Dusty. We got a good compliment. We have a figure pro that listens. I'm going to talk all about that with Dave Crossland. So that should be fun. Of course, go to teamskip.com. As I mentioned, check out Skip Hill.
Teams,
Intense Muscle. Check out the message board for it's a home where everything the genesis of DC training. Our sponsor, TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code Advices as well as Advices Oats, which gets you 25% off. I'm running on I think 3.5 hours of sleep now over the last 40 hours, something like that, Skip. I need a modafinil. I should have gotten a script of that. For post trip, that would have been good. That's what I could have used.
Well, between you being tired and me being sick, I'm a little concerned because we're letting Donkey Boy carry the show here. So
I don't worry, you've talked 70% of the time. So
I'm trying to keep myself awake.
I feel like you're in a better mood than when we started, though. I feel like
I'm just faking better.
Are you? Better. I feel like you lightened up a little bit. I feel like
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. I'm bitchy. I can feel my bitchiness.
Yeah.
You know, it's just shit. I feel like shit. I have battled to get back in the gym, and then I feel like shit again, and it's just really frustrating because everything is going well, and I'm talking about being sick, like I sleep for 8 hours and then I'm up for five or six maybe and go back and sleep for another fucking 8 hours. My sleep is all over. It's been like this for over a week and it's fucked up. And at least now I'm not as congested and I don't feel as bad, but it just sucks. And it's right in the middle of, you know, when everything is going well, and it gets frustrating. And anybody, I'm sure anybody listening knows how when things are going well, you get sidetracked by something that's not in your control. And it's just really frustrating. You look at all your food that you've prepped in the fridge, and you got to throw it out. And you're like, you're trying to get it a couple more meals because you're back in the gym and you can taste it and go, this is going to make me sick if I'm not careful. Yeah. So just things like that. So I'll be back. I should be back in tomorrow and everything should be going fine, but it does make it rough to, when you're in a shitty mood and your ass is kicked or you're tired coming back, it is hard to be on and not be bitchy and to act like you're not in a bad mood or act like you're not tired, but it, you know, it is what it is.
Well, I'm going to say that Skip's in a better mood now that we got to hang out and talk for a couple hours here. Get to have some laughs, guys. You know, like I said, check out all that stuff. Of course, the home for audio is always advicesradio.com. And that's going to continue staying that way for now. Guys, for another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear with Skip Hill, the S2H, I'm going to get some sleep. See you guys soon.
Oh. Quick as my fuse, vendettas of death, that's the colors I choose. Red or blue, cuz of blood, it just don't matter. Sucker died for your life when my shotgun scatters. Color. The gangs of L.A. will never die. Just multiply colors. 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 Colors.